Welcome to the ESG Matters podcast. My name is Ahmad Gomis. Today we have John Schmia, Vice President of Circularity and Senior Analyst at Green Biz Group. John recently finished hosting Circularity 2022, a conference where over 850 trailblazers from the private, public, and nonprofit academia and research discuss accelerating the circular economy. Welcome to the ESG Matters podcast, John.
Thanks for having me, Ahmad.
Great. I think, you know, just to level set, it would be great if you could discuss what was your path to ESG professionally?
Yeah, you know, my path was a little bit winding in some ways. I went to college like a lot of others coming out of high school thinking I was going to be a pre-med, maybe making my mark being a surgeon or a pediatrician or something. And I quickly realized that biology was not my jam. So having discovered that, I decided to switch over to chemistry instead. And interestingly enough, then I got stuck in the path. Well, I made this choice, I might as well sort of follow through with it. So I got a degree in chemistry, then I got a master's in chemistry, then I got a PhD in chemistry, all the time not knowing what I really wanted to be when I grew up, but knowing for sure that I didn't want to work in a lab anymore. And when I got on my PhD program, I was passionate about climate change by that point, and I applied to 100 plus jobs just trying to get a climate job. And everybody kept saying, you know, you have a PhD in chemistry, what are you doing here? And I finally got some good advice from a mentor that just said, hey, man, you have a chemistry degree, use it, at least for a while, get that first job under your belt and figure it out from there. And I was lucky enough, actually, after that advice, to land a job as an environmental chemist at Steelcase, the office furniture manufacturer. And that role was really digging into our supply chain to learn what chemicals were coming along with the materials in our products, assessing them against human and environmental health concerns, and then working with our R&D teams to try to choose better, lower hazard materials. You know, and from there, it was a pretty natural progression of, you know, doing more broad sustainable product development work, followed by leading a team and then leading the corporate sustainability efforts at Anderson Windows and Doors. And, you know, I just recently switched over to Green Biz from that role. So spent about 9 years as a sustainability practitioner before this new role at Green Biz.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for that. I think it's really important for people to understand that while right now there's a lot of educational opportunities to specialize in sustainability coming out of grad school or undergrad even, those opportunities really didn't exist for most of us. So having an understanding of how people got to where they are gives people hope who may not have the educational background that's present today, but that doesn't mean you can't find your way into something and do some good. And speaking of good, I'm really interested to understand that, like I said in the beginning, you recently wrapped up Green Biz Circularity 2022. Can you explain the potential impact of circularity, if done right, both for businesses and for climate change?
Yeah, I think probably a little biased here since I've devoted quite a bit of my career to the circular economy idea, but I think it's central to both business, future business success and fighting climate change. On the business side, it's becoming more and more clear, I think, that we're running up against the limits of this sort of extractful, wasteful global economy that we currently have. We just can't keep sending chemicals and materials down a one-way trip to the landfill or the incinerator. We've seen that in recent years where everyday commodities that we used to take for granted are becoming harder to find, right? So if you think of timber and lumber, for example, prices skyrocketed during the pandemic. And that was due to a number of factors, right? It was worker shortages, it was wildfires in the West where we do a lot of forestry. And, you know, those prices have been volatile ever since. And I think you can say the same for plastics, metals, essentially, you know, every material that powers our current economy. So, you know, if businesses want to mitigate future risk related to that supply chain shortage, they're going to have to explore alternative supply for materials likely that have already been extracted and used once or more times, right? So keeping materials in circulation is going to really reduce risk for companies down the line. The other point on the business side that I think is interesting is we're starting to see a little bit of groundswell from consumers or users of products that they're just kind of sick of the linear model, right? They're sick of having to throw away packaging with everything they buy. They're sick of cheaply made sort of single use products and the like. Now, obviously this isn't all consumers, but we're starting to see more and more of this frustration. And I think, you know, given that possible, that sort of current trajectory of consumer behavior, circularity might end up being a license to operate for companies in the not so distant future. I think it's following a similar path to how much public companies are actually being asked to address climate change in some ways. So hopefully that groundswell of consumer behavior helps. And then on the climate side, I think it's clear that every step of the journey from extracting material from the ground all the way to the waste of that material has climate impacts, right? So because of that, we have to figure out a way to decouple economic growth and human well-being from this extractive sort of method that we've developed over the last 100, 150 years. So to me, the current linear economy and climate change are sort of attached at the hip, and they have to be addressed together. When I think about this issue, I often think Kate Raworth's concept of donut economics, right? We have to learn as a society how to meet the needs of this growing population. So bring the bottom people up into the donut while also keeping everything within the outer boundaries of the planet. And to me, we're doing a really terrible job of both of those things right now. We're overshooting planetary boundaries on one side. We've got billions of people in poverty just struggling to survive on the other side. And I think we need to be really creative in order to bring everybody within that donut, and that should help us address climate change. And to me, circularity is a big part of that future solution. We can't do it without ending this one-way trip that we have for materials right now.
I 100% agree with you. I think it is really important for companies to understand that in the future, to your point, in order for them to have a license to operate, they will have to have a better understanding of the extractive nature of their business and how they can mitigate. And also, is there a competitive edge by looking at circularity principles and implementing them in not only their supply chain, but in other ways that they create new opportunities and explore new business ventures? Yeah. And speaking of that, the conference, what were some ways in which companies, are you starting to see them start to engage with this fairly new concept of circularity?
Yeah, sort of on this piece, I think I've got one sort of optimistic takeaway and one that's a little more pessimistic and hopefully we can address here in the near future. On the optimistic side, the world's largest companies are really starting to see circularity as a differentiator and a way for them to remain relevant, right? They're looking at their own operations from tip to tail with this goal of eliminating waste. A lot of them are starting to design products that better fit in a circular economy model, through things like recycling, remanufacturing, reuse, repair, all the R's. And they're mapping out where the leakage is in their own processes and working to eliminate them. So that's a really good start, right? Companies are starting to see the value of this. And I think it's promising because we can't really achieve circularity goals without those large individual companies and the small and medium enterprises as well doing their part. So along those lines, we're also seeing a proliferation of roles within these large corporates that actually have circular economy or circularity in the title. Even from 2019, when GreenBiz hosted its first circularity conference up till now in 2022, the number of attendees that went from having titles like sustainability engineer, sustainability analyst, to circularity or circular economy analyst really exploded. And I think that's interesting to see that companies are starting to recognize they need experts within their four walls to address these issues. On the slightly more pessimistic side, but I think it's a big opportunity, most companies are engaging on circularity either alone or with a really small universe of partners. The downside to that approach is that we can generally only make progress sort of on the margins if we're not working with all the supply chain, both up and down and across sectors. So we're basically doing too much circularity on a case-by-case basis right now, rather than thinking about the whole system. And there are clear business reasons for this. It's hard to collaborate across businesses and across sectors, but it definitely makes circularity innovations difficult to scale. So unfortunately, I don't have a really good answer about like how to get more collaborative, collective effort going, but I think it is ripe for some sort of, you know, whether it's regulation or big investment from large corporates partnering together to really start to scale these circularity initiatives. And so that's kind of what I'm hoping to see over the next couple of years, is just more large collaborations, large collectives. Even things like the UN Global Treaty on Plastic Waste could be an initiator of this big scaled solution to circular economy.
When you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, the companies that have started to implement circularity, I wonder if they are doing it because there's also, they may operate in a industry where the margins are fairly low. So they look at circularity as a way to be competitive and looking at efficiency and increasing efficiency. So I was wondering if that was something that you see. And then to that also, are you seeing certain industries that maybe are more positioned to adopt or have adopted circularity and implemented those principles more so than others? Because I just wonder, to your point about the need for cross collaboration up and down the supply chain and really the value chain, are there certain industries that you can see, oh, this industry is really well positioned to do that, whereas another industry may take a while for there to be adoption widespread?
Yeah, I think on your first point about the margins, sort of low margin businesses, is a really good one, Amat. One of the things I think about with this idea of efficiency and reuse and trying to really drive efficiency through your businesses, one of the things that always comes top of my mind for me is packaging, right? There are so many large packaging companies out there and brands using packaging, right? They're really focused on how to maybe minimize the cost of that packaging to increase the value of their products. And that can sometimes fly in the face of circularity, but in the case of sort of recyclable or reusable, it could be actually a benefit for these companies. So I think we're starting to see a lot of innovative thought in the packaging space, you know, whether it's these smaller packaging companies that are bringing us reusable solutions that can be sent back, which I think is a really good development. Or even if it's, you know, some of these more, I guess, maybe less innovative is not the right way to put it, but sort of drop-in solutions that can be more easily recycled or remanufactured. I think of IPG's Kirby innovation, where now the bubble mailers are 100% paper. So you don't have to try to remove a plastic bubble from the inside of a piece of paper in order to recycle just the paper and throw away the bubble. So we're starting to see some innovations. I think packaging is a really good example of one of those markets that's sort of low enough margin where it can actually be a differentiator if they do it right. On the question of other industries, I kind of wish I had a better answer for it, but I think every industry has an opportunity if they're creative about it. It's just a matter of what types of products are you making, and the solution set might be slightly different depending, right? So if you think of these products with short product life cycles, it could be fashion, it could be packaging, like we just talked about, or it could be things like technology, cell phones, things like that. If your product's life cycle is, you know, sort of on the day, on the lifetime of a couple days up to maybe a couple of years, I think you can reasonably expect to know what the conditions around recycling and take back will be when that product's life cycle, that product's first life cycle is through. And then I think there's a lot of opportunity to design your product within sort of the current state, right? And iterate as the current state changes over time. So, you know, if you're making a cell phone right now, how do you plan for 2-3 years down the road when that thing's going to come back? How do you get the raw materials out of it, the critical minerals, things like that, so they can be reused in a new product? So I think for products with shorter life cycles, it's really about innovating the current product design. Where it gets a little bit fuzzy for me is these products with much longer lifetimes. Think building products, cars and trucks, heavy machinery, even infrastructure, things like roads and bridges, right? It feels to me like when your product has a several decade life cycle, you can't really estimate what the world's going to look like when it comes out of its first use. And so therefore, you should be sort of designing for repair, remanufacturing, reuse, et cetera. Just not knowing what the world's going to look like at the end of that product's first life cycle. When I think of my past role at Anderson Windows and Doors, for example, I think of our products generally lasted between 40 and, you know, up to 80 years. And trying to think about, well, what's going to happen to that product at the end of its life, or try to keep tabs on that product through its whole life, can be really difficult. And so the best you can do is sort of design your current set of products based on current conditions of recycling, but also make sure they're repairable, you know, so that you can keep that first product in its life cycle for a lot longer. So that's sort of a long way of saying, I think the considerations are different depending on what industry you're in, but I don't feel like there's an industry that is without a need for some circular innovation.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but I think when you think about those products that have decades long or even longer lifespans, I think there is an opportunity there when you think about bridges, those sort of infrastructure, can that material that you're building, is it something that can be reused? Like, you know, the roads, I don't want to go too ancient, but like the Roman roads were taken apart and used, and those bricks were then used to create something else for bridges mm-hmm. and things later. So I think there is an opportunity to say maybe it's more modular in a way. So that way, instead of it being one massive component, maybe it's smaller components, which to your point would help replacing and repairing easier. We all live in a country or countries rather that have either a crumbling infrastructure or there's a need for more infrastructure due to the demands in the future. So maybe there's an opportunity to create something that can expand, maybe contract with the needs of the population as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think we're starting to see a lot of that innovation. I'm not as familiar with, you know, sort of the roads and bridges space, but in buildings especially, we're starting to see a lot more innovation and modularity with materials that can either be broken down and reused or just taken apart, like Lego blocks, things like that. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for that. And then on the other side, there's also opportunity to develop new and innovative recycling and reuse methods for all the materials that are already out there, right? What do we do with tar from our roads when we pull it up to repave a road or concrete out of our buildings? I think there's a lot of opportunity there too that maybe new business models are more appropriate than trying to tweak our current models in some ways.
And that's very true. When you think about the Circularity Conference, was there anything that you learned that surprised you or speaker that really made an impact that has stuck with you? Because it's been a little bit over a month now. So I know you're still coming down from doing, spending so much of your own time and effort to put it on and to facilitate it. So I just didn't know if there was anything that sort of stuck out to you when you sort of reminisce about the Circularity Conference.
Yeah. Is it fair to say I wish I would have learned a lot more? I think it's a really difficult space, right? And I get that. We're asking folks and large companies to sort of completely reconsider how they design, manufacture, ship, even market and sell products, right? So I think what's exciting about how difficult that is that many companies are really taking it seriously now and sort of working to take action on circular economy. What's a little bit disheartening is, you know, the progress is slow because the change is so huge. And so one of the things that I'm starting to come away with more and more through my years of doing this is you can't really compare it to a lot of other movements in corporate sustainability in the past. You know, if you think about things like renewable energy procurement or water waste reductions, things like that, like in a lot of cases, they can be bolt-ons to your current business. And a lot of those things can be accomplished through existing technology and, you know, financial and contractual means alone. And I think it's sort of difficult to wrap our heads around how circular economy can be achieved in that way. And, you know, that's not to discount those other efforts. They're hard also. But I think what we're asking people to do with circular economy is just completely rethink the way their businesses operate. And so we're seeing more slow progress than we'd like. What I would say, though, is that it was exciting at the conference. A couple things. First, we saw quite a few more people there with sort of innovation or R&D in their job roles, as opposed to just, you know, sort of the sustainability professionals at companies. And so we're starting to see companies invest more in teaching their product designers, their innovation teams, you know, how to think in a circular manner. And that's really interesting. You know, we had innovation folks from Nike and Coca-Cola that aren't part of the sustainability team. And so that's cool. The other thing we saw a lot of that I think is exciting is this idea of tracking and traceability and how that's going to play a huge role in a future circular economy, right? Once a product's out in the world, how do we know where it is? How do we make sure we can get it back? And then in addition to that, how do we fairly compensate the people that are maybe in informal markets trying to collect and bring back those materials? There's also technological needs around how do we connect folks who have things with folks that need them, right? So how do we make those connections out there? And there's a lot of, especially in the fashion industry, that are starting to do good work there. And then, you know, that technology that is being developed around, you know, things like AI and blockchain can also help us, you know, monitor farmlands to look at soil health and things like that. So I think that was one of the things that was exciting to me from maybe the last in-person circularity in 2019 to this one in 2022 is how many companies are investing in, you know, really cutting edge technology to push this forward into the future. So that, you know, that was probably my biggest takeaway is one, we need to move faster. And sort of two, is technology part of the solution to making this all move faster so we can keep things in circulation?
And that makes a lot of sense. I think that is a really way to summarize it because, you know, I think with sustainability, typically people in corporate America specifically really think of it as a siloed function. And I think the one thing that we can sort of show as success is that if we work ourselves out of a job because sustainability becomes embedded in all different parts of the organization and they're able to make those connections in, especially for something like circularity, where R&D takes a major role in it. And there's an opportunity to not only create new, solve an issue, but also create new opportunities for businesses to grow and to flourish and to help people both, you know, the triple P, people, planet, possibilities. So
wouldn't it be great if we could work ourselves out of a job, Amat? I think that would be the future.
Not too soon because I kind of still need one, but I do think that it would be great if we could say, you know, my title isn't sustainability. I work in, to your point, like if you were circling back to when you started, right? If you could have been a chemist doing R&D that is sustainable in nature, right? Yep. There's an opportunity there to leverage your PhD in a way that you may be able to make some really interesting conclusions and research ideas and products that ordinarily we wouldn't, if you were in a typical sustainability role, you wouldn't have. So I think there is that component.
Well,
and you talked,
yeah. You know, just briefly, you actually just reminded me of this. There was a few different really good discussions around chemistry at the conference. I think John Warner, famous for his work in green chemistry, speak on our main stage. We had a couple other panels that really focused on chemistry a lot. And I think that's another thing that companies are starting to wrap their heads around more. You know, if you're a product manufacturer buying materials, a lot of times you don't know all the chemistry in the materials you're bringing in. And I think there's a growing sort of demand, not only within the consumers, but also within these end brands that are selling products to learn more about their chemistry. And I think it's really crucial, right? We don't want to keep cycling through toxic chemicals if we can avoid it. And so there was a lot more discussion this year about chemistry than there has been in the past. And I think that was a really welcome change, especially for me.
Well, that's great. And just to wrap things up, you've mentioned this in the conversation we've had so far, but I just want to just ask you flat out, what do you see next for circular economy?
Yeah, we're starting to see a lot of cool innovations bubble up in some ways outside of the major companies, some of these startups, innovative companies out there thinking about the problems in different ways. And I think as we continue to see shocks in the supply of raw materials, right, whether that be because of climate change impacts, pandemics, all of these issues that are sort of disrupting our supply chains at the moment, I would anticipate that the next big move in circularity is going to be just scale. Some of these cool innovations coming to scale faster than we've seen in the past due to a big brand or a large shipping company or something adopting someone's new innovation because of a need, right? So I think that is one thing that we could see accelerate in the not so distant future, hopefully in the next few years. There could also be a bigger investment, I think, and I think this is another opportunity, just a bigger investment in reuse, recovery, and recycling infrastructure, right? We know that we don't have enough facilities, for example, to clean reusable packaging. We don't have enough places where people can return goods that they no longer need for reuse or recycling. That can be difficult. We also know that our material recovery facilities for recycled plastics and paper and glass are sort of filled to the brim right now, and they need to be updated, both more size and more technology to handle all these materials that are coming through. So it seems to me that the two places that we need to go next, and you started to see a little bit of this at the conference, was scaling the really innovative new solutions and investing in that sort of recovery, reuse recycling infrastructure on the backside. And I think if we can sort of clear up those bottlenecks and provide that technology for people, one of the things I said on the keynote stage at the conference is, if we're going to design a circular economy, at least out of the gate, it's got to be fairly straightforward for people to use, right? We don't want to add something really complex for the end user, or they're not going to want to do it, right? If there's pain involved, they're going to say, "Yeah, no thanks, I'll skip it." So we really need to start thinking about how to scale innovation and make recovery easier so that it's sort of a drop-in replacement for most consumers. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there, and I think we're starting to see it. And hopefully, you know, over the next 2 or 3 years, a lot of that comes to scale with these big companies really driving innovation from within.
And I think that's a great way to leave it on such a positive and uplifting note. John, thank you so much for being a guest on the ESG Matters podcast. I really did enjoy the conversation. I learned a lot as well. And hopefully I will attend Circularity 2023.
I hope you do too, Amat. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Thank you for listening to the ESG Matters podcast. Please like, share, and subscribe to the ESG Matters podcast on your choice of podcast platforms. This podcast is brought to you by Amat Gumis and theme music by Dexter Thomas.